Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Hey everybody, Paul O'Connor here. Welcome to episode 8 of the Behind the Game podcast. Today we were joined by our favorite New York City principal, Caroline Sliney of the School of the Bus and Sacrament. Super cool conversation. We talked about our partnership that's been going on for about 6 years. We talked about her background, her career pathways, and of course, her favorite New York City slice. Give it a listen now. Okay, we are now joined by Caroline Sliney. She is the principal at the School of the Bus at Sacrament over here on the Upper West Side. Caroline, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it. I know that we took you out of school around 2:30, so maybe you're happy about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I escaped early on
yes,
Friday.
It's good.
Happy
Friday.
Exactly.
Yes.
Happy Friday to you.
Of course. So obviously, anybody that knows Kids in the Game, you guys are one of, if not our longest standing school partnerships. We will get into all the ways that we partner, but first and foremost, for people that don't know, tell us how you got here. You know, obviously you had your time at the Archdiocese of LA. You were a teacher and program coordinator at, I'm going to butcher it, but is it St. Aloysius?
Yeah, good
job. I did not butcher it.
So you definitely LinkedIn and Googled
it. I did.
This is good.
Yep,
okay,
I stalked you on LinkedIn. then you, assistant principal at SBS, and now obviously the principal.
Yeah.
Talk through that, and was that always the plan?
It kind of feels weird to be like, oh yeah, how did I end up here? by accident, completely. I thought I wanted to work in the news. I worked at NBC in college and did an internship there in 2008, which was, some exciting things happening in the news in 2008. And
we could probably use you in the news now.
I guess it was interesting because I started, got a lot of coffee, learned a lot, but then they started having me write for basically, what goes on at lunch in, retirement communities. There's special news that is, just goes out, and it's just, I assume, playing in the background. And I got chastised and corrected for using words that were too big, and I was an English major and a nerd. So I was like, well, that's weird. Why not? And they were like, you really need to be working, talking like you're talking to a third or a fourth grader. That's how you should be writing the news. And I was like, for this particular community or for everyone?
Or in general?
No, for everyone.
Wow.
That's kind of the way that we choose how we, express what's going on in the world. And I was like,
okay.
That's kind of messed up. And then started thinking, maybe we should do something about the fact that we're all at the third or fourth grade level. and then at the time, I had been kind of tutoring on the side. And then as I got more involved and worked Super Tuesday, and, I was kind of in this really awesome experience, sitting in the green room with Peggy Noonan and Rachel Maddow and,
very cool,
chatting live about what was going on Super Tuesday. And I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to tell my kids about this tomorrow. I can't wait to tell the kids I'm tutoring. Liked that, but missed New York. So came back and went to St. Al's up in Harlem. And then kind of fell into leadership. I think that, many people in Catholic education, and particularly in leadership, the more you work, the more you're like, we could do this better. And so you kind of start to move up, and that kind of happened to me. And went to Notre Dame and studied leadership, and really started to think that I could maybe try to build something. And there was a lot of schools at that time that needed to kind of be rebuilt and kind of brought into the future. And so I met my predecessor at Blessed Sacrament, John Jovan, who was just a great mentor to me. And he surprised me, and 2 years later retired, and I became
principal.
That was
it. Yep.
Yeah.
Good timing. Very good timing.
Definitely happened a little bit quicker than I had anticipated, but it's been a really great 6 years now.
Six years.
Wow.
Yeah, you definitely, you're humble because you skipped over the fact that you have two masters. Loyola and Notre Dame, correct?
Yes.
Yes. So was that always in the plan?
I don't know how you can work with kids in education without continuing to learn yourself.
Yeah.
So that kind of, I was really lucky with the classes and the program that I was in because it was all just really relevant and really forward-thinking programs that were really working to kind of adapt to what was happening in the educational climate at the time, and just have great networks of educators that are now even continuing to kind of change education. So I just kind of kept going back to school and kept learning, which I still kind of do informally, but no more masters.
Yeah, no more masters. Yeah, that's a lot. So kudos to you, because obviously two fantastic schools, and I'm sure it helps every day.
Yeah, for sure.
So 6 years with SBS, you know, I think we found out a little bit earlier than the public, but talk about the transition with Sacred Heart of Jesus and how that looks and how that's going to look in the future.
Yeah, so we just announced last week it is going to be called Blessed Sacrament, which we're very excited about.
Well, there you go.
So sadly, you know, we're going to do a lot to kind of honor the traditions of Sacred Heart in that community, but we are kind of moving the Blessed Sacrament name down to 52nd Street.
Gotcha.
We are in a unique place. We've grown a lot over the last 5 years and have been kind of steadily adding second classes to our elementary program, and there's still a lot of interest and momentum to continue to do that, but we're out of classroom space. So we kind of started doing a lot of research, trying to figure out what our options would be for expanding and for growing, and looked at a lot of different spaces and tried to kind of work through a lot of different options. And Sacred Heart of Jesus has a great building down on 52nd Street, and their enrollment has been kind of steadily declining, unfortunately. They've been through a lot of transition down there. So what kind of evolved is this idea of really kind of redesigning a school to be supportive to kids at very specific developmental stages. So what happens when you can really build an elementary program and not have to worry about whether or not the big kids are gonna, you know, climb all over the jungle gym? Or what does a middle school playground look like and outdoor area look like if you don't have to worry about where the pre-K kids are storing their tricycles? Which I think we've seen in a lot of different kinds of schools, but not as much in Catholic schools, so we're excited, and this is kind of our building year for that. So we're opening in September 2019.
A lot of meetings about that. We're excited as well.
Yeah.
A little stressed, but excited.
You and me both.
Yep.
It's been a lot of work, and it's going to continue to be a lot of work, but I really think it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Once we start.
Yes. It's a perfect segue. The next thing that we wanted to talk about was kind of the Catholic school dynamic. You know, when my parents are much older, they're 72 and 68 respectively.
I'm sure they love hearing you say that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure they're listening. But they went to Catholic school their whole life, and I think back, you know, years ago, Catholic school was, you know, if not one, it was viewed above public school and sometimes even viewed above private schools. Mm-hmm. That has certainly shifted in today's climate, and especially here in New York, where, just like you mentioned, Sacred Heart was struggling. What are the things that you've done, you and your administration have done, to just put SBS, you know, obviously on the map, you know, especially from when you originally took over?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard. I'm a big advocate for school choice. I'm a big believer that there's a school for everyone, and schools should be different. And I talk to, you know, prospective families about that all the time, that it's a choice, and we're not necessarily for everyone, but we're for a lot of people. And I think that parents need to be empowered to choose what's a good fit for their kids. But if you're not really forward, I'm not phrasing it correctly, but like, I just think you need to be really transparent with who you are and what you're about as a school in order for people to be like, yes, that's where my kid's going to thrive. That's where, you know, I want my family to be. Because especially in New York, you're choosing a school not only for the education, but also for the community, because so many of us are transplants. So many of us kind of build these second families within the city, that you want to really be part of a community that you're feeling like is an extension of yourself. So I think that really being specific and intentional with who we are and what we do is really important. And then also really making sure that the communities feel like they, or the parents feel like they have a community that they can rely on. But we focused a lot in those early years of making sure that we just had a really great teacher team, which is hugely important, obviously. And when I hire, it's always trying to find people that are really student focused, who are really focused on the kids, who are really kind of lifelong learners, that they're willing to be reflective in their practice and to improve and to really view teaching as an art and to get better at their art and get better at their craft. And I think we've got a great team that does that at Blessed Sacrament. So I think that has naturally helped performance and achievement, but then also making sure that parents feel like they're partners and that they're, you know, their child's primary educator and they've chosen to partner with us, and there's open communication and transparency and there's empowerment and things like that that I think is really helpful for families to really feel like this is the right choice for me. And obviously partnering with people like the game.
Nice plug. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. It's true though. I think it's funny because, you know, when Matt and Michael met with me 6 years ago, it was a really small program at Kids in the Game. It was just, mm-hmm. It was kind of a two-man show at that point.
Yep.
And that was what Lessons in Tech was too. So we kind of were like,
yeah, we've grown
yeah,
together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So that's been kind of, I think, a huge game changer that we've been able to say, you know, you don't have to drag your kids all over the city to go do after school programs. You can kind of get that experience here, or, you know, kids night out and things like that. And the programs have kind of evolved naturally together to kind of meet the needs. And I mean, staffing and pricing and all of the not sexy elements of running a school impact whether or not you can kind of create those opportunities for your families. So partnering with outside organizations like Kids in the Game has been helpful in kind of getting some of those resources available to be able to be like, yeah, we can make that happen,
yeah,
as opposed
that.
To being like,
yeah.
Oh, that's not really the budget. That's
yeah.
interesting that you want that.
Yep.
So that's been really helpful as well. And I think that's resonated with families, that they feel like they've invested and their voices have been heard and their kids are happy and successful and loved. So.
Yeah. We have a, you know, kind of a high-level question, which is just, what are the challenges of being a New York City principal compared to being a principal outside of this concrete jungle? But before I give you that one, I did want to come back to you talked about, you know, hiring teachers that are student-focused. What are your thoughts? I'm 29, so I feel weird even when I say when I grew up. I mean, it's like it was just 10 years ago. I was just 18.
But it's
so
totally different.
It's
totally
different. And there seems to be, especially I guess in some of the more progressive schools, homework is just going away.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a smart decision? Are we going to look back in 10 years and say all of Europe and the rest of the world do 4 hours of homework and that's why we're behind? Or are we saying, you know what, after school programming is actually more important than just sitting down and doing a worksheet?
Yeah. I mean, I'm constantly asking why to everything. So, you know, I think that I've worked with teachers in the past who have, like, given out these crazy homework packets. And I'm like, well, what's the purpose? And sometimes there is an answer that makes sense. And I'm like, okay, like, let's maybe make this manageable. And other times they've kind of come back.
This is what we've always
done.
Exactly.
Or like, if they don't do 10 pages of multiplication problems, how are they going to memorize their multiplication problems? Like, well, there's
a lot of worksheets. Which I did. Yeah, that was me. 7 times 7.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I did so many worksheets, girl. And I remember having so much homework. And I still now have, like, relearned math from teaching it in a different way. And I'm much better at math now than I ever was as a kid, because
that's
I was
good.
Like a kill and drill kid. That teachers would just be like, no, just keep practicing, it'll click eventually. Or like, here's the formula and just keep applying the formula.
It never clicked for me.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, which is why I was an English major. I loved college. I was like, I just get to read books all day. This is wonderful.
Yeah, this is great.
That's not all that an English major is, but so with the homework stuff, I think it's hard because parents want to see it, right? There's a level, I think, of regardless of what it is, like the discipline, the structure, the idea that, you know, you have to practice and reinforce what you've done, or even kind of the routine for a lot of families of like going home and this is homework time and then it's play time and things like that. I really struggle when it takes really away from being a kid. I think like some of these kids are 7 and 8 years old and they're packed schedules. You know, like they are at school until 4:30 because they're doing basketball or soccer or chess or whatever it is. And then in the city particularly, like most families are two parent working households.
Mm-hmm.
So dinner time is the time that you should really be talking to your parents
yeah.
and like
hanging out.
Exactly. And so I do think that keeping in mind that kids need to be kids is super important. Are we going to look back in 10 years and be like, the reason that some of these kids are not functioning adults is like, is it because of homework problem?
Yeah.
I think that like, I'm a big advocate for like you know, if you are out playing and problem solving or pretending or learning how to talk to your friends. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we try to do that a lot in terms of, like, giving kids opportunities just to, like, be curious and to get their hands dirty and to play. And yep. There's just so much research about how important play is for kids. But we don't really build that into the schedule. And New York, in general, I think is challenging to schedule kids because you want them to be safe. And they can't just, like, go play out in the backyard. And so we have to be a little bit more creative about it. But I think that especially the older grades, I think it's good to get in the habit of going home and doing homework and practicing what you've learned that day. But if you didn't get it in class, you're not going to get it when you go home.
Yep.
So that's, you know, I think that it's an extension of the learning experience. Homework should be used intentionally in that kind of bigger picture.
Yeah. You talked about it briefly, kind of the challenges of New York with, like, the space and the safety issue. Do you think that is the biggest issue you have of being a New York City school principal?
I know
there's probably a bunch, so that's kind of a loaded question.
No, I mean, New York is definitely, you know, it's interesting. I think I grew up in a suburb where, you know, my mom, like, drove me around everything, and then, you know, on the weekends we, like, hung out at Friendly's, and it was like
Friendly's, wow, that's a throwback.
Yeah,
yep.
Little throwback for you, to show up my age too. But then there was an element of kind of independence that I just think is harder to give, or I think it's harder for parents to figure out how to give that independence to kids in New York, because, like, it's not
worried.
you're not, like, going to Friendly's and, like, getting dropped off and picked up and, like, having dinner with your friends. You're, like, getting on a subway or a bus, you know. So I think that because so much of what we do at Blessed Sacrament and try to do is partner with the parents, supporting them and kind of that learning curve is definitely a challenge. And as someone who's not a parent myself, I think it's definitely something that you want parents to know that we're here for you and we can help you in that. But I think it's definitely stressful. And, you know, urban environments have different, you're just exposed to different things, you know, that you see things that kids who are getting picked up and dropped off in a car may not.
Yeah.
It's just a different environment. I don't think that it's harder. I don't think it's wrong. I don't think it's right. I think, you know, I think there's a lot of culture. There's a lot of access to things, which makes it an awesome place to grow up.
Yep.
I think, you know, I'm biased, but I think our kids are super cool.
They are.
And I think it's because that they are real city kids, you know, like that they know how to navigate the subway even though they're 7 years old. Or, you know,
whatever a seventh grade boy or girl is doing, listening to, talking about is where the culture is.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've just got these big personalities, which I think the kids everywhere do, but I think that there's an element of being a city kid that's different.
Your edges are I mean, you have to be. Grow up, I think by the time you hit fifth grade, you're like, yeah, I know where to go.
Right.
Like, I'll go get my own Gatorade.
Well,
in the corner.
Like, think about, like, you walk down Broadway and you're like, oh, I'm seeing some interesting things. Like, as an adult, you're like, well, I'm not totally sure how to, like, interpret what that guy's doing, or, like, this is kind of strange. And in, you know, people who come to visit the city are always like, oh my god, system overload. Like, there's so much going on. So, like, I can only imagine the experience
growing up
in Helena. But I think that on the flip side of that, the hardest thing for me is just managing the safety. You know, I just think, unfortunately, like we were talking before, like, I don't know when this is going to air, but it's...
Soon enough, where it'll be
real. It's October 26th, and we had, you know, bomb scares all over the city. And working in a school that serves kids from pre-K 3 to 8th grade, you're having a lot of different conversations. If you're, again, talking to a lot of different parents who are in different places, and I think it's hard to explain to kids, like, going into lockdown. It's really hard to explain to kids that, don't worry, we're always here to keep you safe, but then we can't really control whether or not there's danger in the city.
Yeah.
So I think that that's probably the hardest thing for me, which could be anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's a city-specific problem, but I think that...
It's certainly elevated here.
It's elevated, and it's just, I think it's something that, like, just that is hard about being in education right now in general. It's just the hardest thing is just trying to be like, how can we be as prepared as possible to
deal with any type of situation.
And it means going to a lot of scary trainings and having a lot of scary conversations, but it's super important. So.
And that could be the answer to the next question. I mean, what did you not expect to be dealing with as a principal? I mean, that one probably you expected a little, but...
The heavy answer is, you know, I don't think I ever thought, like, I'd be in an active shooter training.
Yeah.
Like, that's certainly...
terrifying.
Yeah. But, I mean, on the flip side, I don't think, like, anyone can be prepared to work in a school.
Yeah. Yeah, you just gotta do it. You gotta work
it. Yeah, I mean, I think I could tell you so many stories at the time, so you're like, what is, like, is this really my life? Yeah. Like,
I know, we try to even think about what your day-to-day is, and I can't, it's similar to our, like, I mean, we have some standard days where it's like, all right, I know I'm in the office today, but then I would say 4 out of the 5 days a week, I'm like, I wake up, I actually really do have to look at my calendar and be like, oh, wow, I have to be in the Bronx, Harlem, and Brooklyn today.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's a completely different day than what tomorrow is, and I'm sure you're the same.
Yeah, it's, I think it's probably one of my favorite parts of it. Like, that at any given day, I can be like, working on marketing material, and then I could be giving a tour and meeting prospective families who are awesome, or I can meet with you guys and be like coming up with some really cool new opportunity for the kids, and then, you know, someone gets a nosebleed, and or we had like a lice check last week. We had like 6 kids in my office that, obviously, you don't want them to be sad that they have lice, but they have to go home.
Yep.
So then they were like having a lice party in the principal's office, and I was like, "How is this?" And then they thought it was so funny. Like, another kid would come and they'd be like,
"You got lice too?
Lice Where's your lice? My lice was here." And I'm like, "This is insane." But that's what makes it fun. Also, is you know, that the kids just make it really entertaining and really fun. But yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
From day to day.
Every day is completely different.
But that's what's so fun about working with humans. You know, if you have 500 small humans under the age of 14, like, crazy things are going to happen every day.
Small humans is a good way to put it. I like that. All right, so 2 more things. One, we have, of course, a shameless plug.
Okay.
Obviously, we've been with you guys for 6 years now, which is insane.
I know.
You know, I think you can look at it any way, you know, you see, but what do you think is the most beneficial aspect of the partnership between, you know, ourselves and your school?
Yeah, I really enjoyed, Matt might say this is what he does not enjoy, but I really have enjoyed being able to kind of build out the programs together. And I think there's definitely like different perspectives and different kind of like areas of expertise that everyone kind of brings to the table, but we've, for the most part, been able to really build a unique program that really is tailored to our community.
Yeah.
And I think that has really been super beneficial to my kids and my students. And that's, you know, I love being able to like work with Wilson, and he's our basketball coach. And, you know, Wilson's been with us since we started our basketball program. So the fact that we like have a CYO team, and I have someone who isn't necessarily a teacher that I'm like, you know, spreading super thin. It's not a parent that I'm kind of like, come on, you gotta coach the basketball team. It's someone who knows how to coach, who knows how to work with kids, who I can trust, who won't make it an issue if I'm like, you know, you can't play, like Paul can't play today because he was acting up, or, you know,
it's like,
he didn't do well. And it's like, okay, great, do you want me to talk to him? Do you want me to like pull him aside and kind of talk some sense into him? And so it's just been nice. That's just one example of a program that didn't exist that we were able to build out together, and we were able to really cater it to what the kids need, because I think that is something that in all education, you never want it to be about budget, but it always ends up being about budget. Like, we can't offer that program because it's too expensive, or but we've been able to kind of work it out with you guys that, you know, I feel like sometimes we're just like bartering and trading, like time and talent. Exactly. And which I probably shouldn't have been like publicly. That has been helpful, that it's the answer is on both sides, I think, is often just yes.
Yep.
And so when two groups come to the table with that kind of mindset, like, yeah, we can build it, yeah, we can create it, yeah, we can get better, what is able to kind of come from that is really special. So that I think is my favorite thing.
That's a good answer. No, it's it's good to hear because internally, you know, we're constantly thinking about what is our differentiator compared to the tons of other after-school programs that you can do. And I think for us, it makes it hard on us because, like you said, each one of our programs is unique to the school.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in a process now where, you know, 8 years in, we're trying to standardize our programming without making it cookie cutter out of the box.
Right.
So that's something that we're struggling with to this day. And it's like, well, this is what we can do and we're going to make it unique for you guys. But like, we have to be able to just say, this is what you're going to get with room for growth and coming to the table and saying, yes, we can do that and all those types of things.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously you have to like run a business, right? You
can't
be like,
yes.
Absolutely. You want a juggling club? Cool. Yes. We'll go hire somebody that's going to teach your juggling club. Like, I think that I say that within reason. Just that it's been, I think that there's so often you go and you work with people who are trying to sell you something, you know, that they're like, oh, we've got this great after school program, or we've got, you know, this great curriculum, or we have, you know, we talk to millions of people every day about trying to sell you things. But the worst thing for me, as someone who really enjoys the building process and really enjoy, obviously I'm insane and I'm taking on another building to build. So, surprise, I really like that process. The worst thing that you can do is partner with someone who is like, no, this is what we do. Like, this is what I'm offering,
this is it,
and, like, you can make this work or not. And more often than not, you're like, then no.
We can't do that.
Can't do that. But then you always kind of wonder, like, at what cost that I want. You know?
Yep.
That's kind of a struggling, a challenging part.
Yep, for sure. All right, so you've reached the end.
Oh, my gosh.
Congrats.
Thanks.
Now, we have some people say it's the hardest question. To us, it was supposed to be a nice, easy softball down the middle. Two-part. Favorite New York City restaurant and favorite slice. Now, we are moving. This should air this week or early next. We're moving from the Upper West Side down to Five Dye.
Okay.
We look at this as a pizza desert. There's like Freddy and Peppers, and that is about
it. What about Little Italy?
Where is that?
That's like, it's a whole mob of really good pizza. Like over by McDonald's and Starbucks.
See, I don't know. But are you going with favorites in New York City Slice? Or is it just, it's just an Upper West Side spot?
If I were on the Upper West Side, that's where I would go.
That's where you would go.
Slice.
Okay.
Favorite restaurant.
Yeah, this is hard. We've gotten ones, by the way, we've had two people. We asked New York City, and they both said Boston restaurants.
Seriously?
So you, if
oh,
you
please,
want,
no.
if you, yeah.
As somebody who grew up in Boston, that is not true. Boston, New York's restaurants does much better than Boston's. And I say that as like my best friend owns a restaurant in Boston. So sorry, Steph.
We'll send it to her.
Yeah, exactly. Lolita in Boston, if anybody wants
Lolita.
To.
Oh
Lolita.
My.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the okay. We gotta listen to Rick's again. See what he said.
I think my favorite New York restaurant is probably it's basic, but I love it. Is Rosemary's.
Where is
that?
Okay, Rosemary's.
Yeah,
in the West Village.
It's Italian. It's just like really good ambiance, great vibe, affordable.
All good things.
Food. Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably that or like Roberto's in the Bronx. Which is
all
like the best Italian food
that you can have.
I've ever had. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I think I would probably have to go back up to the Bronx for my favorite slice.
Really?
Yeah, Pugsley's by Fordham.
Michael is gonna love you for that. He's a big He always argues for Bronx pizza over Manhattan or Brooklyn or that.
Well,
he's always pushing the Bronx, Riverdale. That's where he lives, so he's always pushing that.
Yeah, I don't know if I go for Riverdale.
But the Bronx.
Yeah,
that's okay.
No, but there is a really good pizza place by Fordham called Pugsley's.
Pugsley's.
It's it looks like it's like in a garage. It's like this little house.
Is it like
and
the college spot?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's amazing and
Pugsley's
it's such good
Fordham.
Food and Sal is the owner and
of course that makes sense. So
they have great chicken rolls and a really good slice and I was supposed to go to campus tomorrow to get one, but it's going to be boring.
Yeah, it's going to be terrible.
Anyway, but that would be my favorite slice, and I would highly recommend Rosemary's or Roberto's.
Rosemary's or Roberto's or Pugsley's.
Or Pugsley's.
Or
yeah.
Pugsley's for the pizza.
Yeah, but like then if you're up by Fordham and you're in Little Italy, you're not going to like, you know, if you're on Arthur
Ave,
you're
not
going to go to Pugsley's. But if for whatever reason you find
yourself, you can do like lunch at Pugsley's and then dinner somewhere else.
Yeah,
that's the move.
Probably. You've never really bad stomach ache and be really full afterwards.
Yeah,
but it would be worth it.
It would be worth it. Awesome. Well, Caroline, again, thank you so much for coming on. We really
Thanks
do appreciate
me.
It. And we'll have you on here again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store and be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kids in the Game NY and Facebook at Kids in the Game NYC.